It was 30 years ago this month, in January 1973, that President Richard Nixon formally ended U.S. involvement in that conflict. Nixon promised peace with honor, but the South Vietnamese government survived only two more years before being toppled by rebel and North Vietnamese forces. U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War was one of the most divisive events in American history. It precipitated a wide range of military, political, social, and cultural issues that will be highlighted in this special series. To inaugurate our series on U.S. involvement in the war in Vietnam, we will focus on the air war and especially American bombing of North Vietnam. Fred Nielsen, professor of history at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and the interviewer for this special series, takes up that issue with his guest, Mark Klodfelter.
Among the most controversial aspects of the Vietnam War was and remains American bombing. The United States dropped more bombs on Indochina than it did on Japan and Germany during World War II. To critics of the Vietnam War, the 1972 Christmas bombings of northern cities were savage and senseless crimes against humanity. Yet others believe that the campaign was responsible for ending the war. In their view, the major mistake was that such bombing had not come earlier. With me today to discuss the American air war in Vietnam is Mark Klodfelter, a historian at the National Defense University near Washington, D.C. He is the author of The Limits of Air Power, The American Bombing of North Vietnam. Professor Klodfelter, welcome.
Yeah, welcome to you.
One often hears comparisons between the U.S. bombing in World War II and in Indochina. Perhaps you could help us understand the comparisons. How many tons of bombs were dropped in the two wars? How many casualties resulted? And perhaps even more, are such comparisons meaningful at all?
First of all, let me start in Germany. And in Germany, you had a combined British and American bombing offensive. There we dropped about 1.2 million tons of bombs, with the bulk of those bombs falling in 1944 and 1945. That bombing killed between 305,000 and 593,000 German civilians, depending upon the totals that you take. The first figure is the American Strategic Bombing Survey figure. The second figure is from German sources. Against Japan, we dropped a much smaller amount of bombs, 147,000 tons, not even close to a million the way we did in Germany, and that was dropped during about a one-year span. But in that case, we killed 330,000 Japanese civilians, a total higher than the American total that we have for bombing in Germany. a comparison, Japanese cities were densely populated, and their industry was spread out across residential areas. So that was part of the reason for American attacks there that were so devastating, but only part. In Vietnam, in Indochina, we dropped roughly 8 million tons of bombs. Roughly 4 million will fall on the country of our ally, South Vietnam. Another 3 million will fall on Laos. And then close to 1 million will fall on North Vietnam. Of the 1 million that fall on North Vietnam, we produced roughly 60,000 dead. And that's, again, a small number compared certainly to what you had in Germany and also to what you had in Japan. Are the comparisons meaningful? I would say only from the standpoint that different types of bombing in different types of conflicts is going to give you different casualty figures. You have to remember that that World War II was a war for unconditional surrender, where we were desiring to destroy the German and Japanese governments and their way of life. Vietnam was anything but a war for unconditional surrender for the United States. There were great limits and constraints placed on the bombing, and thus you have a much smaller casualty figure than you do in World War II. So I think that's a large measure of the distinction.
The first major U.S. air campaign in Vietnam was Rolling Thunder, which ran from March of 1965 to October 1968. Could you describe that campaign for us?
President Lyndon Johnson initiated the campaign trying to do what he could militarily to achieve a stable, non-communist South Vietnam. And in the spring of 1965, South Vietnam was threatened. Part of that threat came from the Viet Cong insurgency that was that we believed was fostered almost entirely by North Vietnam. As a result, the idea was going to be we would cut off the North Vietnamese support for the Viet Cong insurgency through bombing, and thus we would start bombing in the southern areas of North Vietnam, just north of the 17th parallel, and then gradually increase our bombing up the panhandle there of North Vietnam, rolling it northward, as it were, until ultimately the two key cities of Hanoi and Haiphong would come under attack, and we would attack the targets in that area. The idea was that we would cause the North Vietnamese concern. They would realize what we were doing, and they would abandon their war efforts based upon the incremental bombing and the belief that if they were to persist, that we would sooner or later attack their key targets in Hanoi and Haiphong.
You make a distinction between positive and negative political objectives. What's the difference?
Well, that's a term that I've created. Clausewitz had the term positive objectives for an attacking force and negative objectives for a defending force. I'm not that sophisticated. And when I use the terms positive and negative objectives, there's no value added to either term. It's not that one is good and one is bad. It's simply that they are different, but both sets of objectives have to be obtained to be successful in war. Now, what I mean by positive objectives are those that are achieved only through the application of military force, and negative objectives are achieved only by limiting military force. So they are in direct contrast to one another. In the case of Lyndon Johnson and the Vietnam War, his positive political objective was to achieve a stable, non-communist South Vietnam. It was threatened by collapse from external military forces under the North Vietnamese, also from internal military forces provided by the Viet Cong. So Johnson was going to have to apply some degree of military force to preserve an independent, stable, non-communist South. On the other hand, he also had negative objectives that he wanted to achieve, and those negative objectives were, there were three which were critical. One was to keep the Soviets and the Chinese out of direct intervention into the conflict. Johnson remembered the example of Korea, where the Chinese had intervened. He wanted to prohibit that if at all possible, and certainly wanted to keep the Soviet Union out of direct intervention as well. In addition, a second negative objective was to keep the focus of the American public on his great society, his social welfare and reform programs for America. That was where he wanted to put his emphasis, and he thought if a war intensified in Southeast Asia, the American public would focus on that war effort, and thus the support that he was desiring for his social programs would be stripped away, because American emphasis would then go towards the war. And thirdly, a third negative objective was that Johnson wanted to keep world public opinion regarding the United States in a favorable light, and he thought if he applied too much military force against North Vietnam, then America would appear as a great bully, a Goliath beating up on a hapless David, and that was not the image he wanted to portray.
Air Force Chief of Staff Curtis LeMay once declared that he could bomb Vietnam back into the Stone Age. Clearly there are some tensions between the military leaders and the president. I wonder what the military's perspective on the strategic bombing during Rolling Thunder was. What did they hope to accomplish?
Right. That's a famous quote that LeMay had. It comes from his memoirs that he wrote there in the summer of 1965, right after he retired as Air Force Chief of Staff. And he did indeed say, what we need to do is to bomb North Vietnam into the Stone Age. But that was not a call to begin wholesale civilian attacks in North Vietnam. Rather, what LeMay wanted to do was exactly what the term seems to imply, was to take away the ability to wage modern war, the technical means to wage modern war, away from the North Vietnamese. Now, having said that, LeMay and other Air Force generals realized that the technical means to wage modern war for the North Vietnamese was indeed limited. The North Vietnamese had roughly 7 electric power plants, 1 cement factory, 1 iron works, and that was about the extent of their industrial apparatus. To wage warfare, they needed support and assistance from the Chinese and the Soviets. But the idea was, what the American air power could do, we thought, was to threaten this meager industrial apparatus that the North Vietnamese had, to hold it hostage, and thus cause the North Vietnamese to back down and to call off the insurgency that we believe they directed, and to call off also the North Vietnamese troops, to stop sending troops and supplies down south. We had made the mightiest enemy we faced on the planet, that is the Soviet Union, back down to the threat of American air power in 1962, so during the Cuban Missile Crisis. So certainly we thought that now, with the threat posed by Ho Chi Minh and North Vietnam, certainly we could cause those guys to quake as a result of the intimidation of American air power. So that was the premise, and that was the notion. What we failed to understand was the great tenacity that the North Vietnamese had, and in many respects that tenacity undercut the efforts of Rolling Thunder.
After 1968, the war becomes Richard Nixon's war. You spoke earlier of Johnson's objectives as president. How did Nixon's differ from Johnson's?
Well, you can make a strong case that Nixon really had no negative political objectives that held back the application of military power. What he did have was a positive goal that he referred to as peace with honor. Now, this goal was different from Johnson's goal of an independent, stable, non-communist South Vietnam. That positive political objective changed in the aftermath of the Tet Offensive. So Nixon's new goal, peace with honor, was really a euphemism for getting American forces out of Vietnam with our prisoners intact, and hopefully not having the South Vietnamese regime crumble in the immediate aftermath of American withdrawal. In Nixon's own words, he said, "We are fighting for a decent interval for South Vietnam." So Nixon's goal was one that was much, much easier to achieve with any application of military force, much less air power, than had been the case for Johnson.
Perhaps the most controversial bombing campaign of the war was Linebacker 2, the Christmas bombing that lasted for 11 days in December of 1972, near war's end. How was that bombing different from previous campaigns?
Well, in actuality, the targets that were hit during the so-called Christmas bombings, Linebacker 2, were pretty much the same that had been attacked during Rolling Thunder. There were a couple of key differences, though, one of which was the use of B-52s as the mainstay of the air campaign. Nixon was trying to send a signal both to the North Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese that he was very serious in his goal of ending American participation in the war. He was trying to drive the North Vietnamese back to the peace talks that had been broken off there in mid-December to get them to conclude an agreement that they had initially signed up to at the end of October there in 1972 when Kissinger and Le Duc Tho were trying to hammer out an agreement in Paris. At the same time, though, Nixon was trying to persuade South Vietnamese President Nguyen Van Thieu that America would be there willing to provide military force if the North Vietnamese broke this agreement, which he hoped could be concluded there soon after the air campaign ended. So Nixon's goals were extremely specific. The method that he used, B-52s, was something dramatically different from what Lyndon Johnson had used in Rolling Thunder, where there the predominant bombing was with fighter bombers over North Vietnam. And again, Nixon's goals much more limited than those of Johnson earlier.
You quote Nixon, who once claimed that his biggest mistake as president was not Watergate, but the failure to bomb Vietnam earlier in the way that he did in December of 1972. For many other people, it's an article of faith that more force, more bombing of that sort, would have won the war and saved American lives. How much truth is there in such beliefs?
Well, again, my opinion only, my opinion based on a fair amount of research, that bombing earlier would have made very little difference in achieving American success in Vietnam. That is, bombing the way Nixon did in 1972 back in, say, the spring of 65 or any time prior to the Tet Offensive. And the reason for that is the character and conduct of war was very different that during the era of Lyndon Johnson than it was in 1972 for Richard Nixon. From 1965 to the time of the Tet Offensive in 68, the war was really a very infrequently waged guerrilla conflict when the bulk of the enemy forces were composed of Viet Cong, not North Vietnamese Army, NVA, but instead VC. This entire force, if you take the total number of troops they had, say, in August of 1967, equaled about 300,000 men. Of that total, a full quarter of a million were Viet Cong, and only 50,000 were NVA. Yet this entire force fought on an average of only one day out of 30. That is, one day a month. And because of this combat infrequency, they needed very few supplies from outside of South Vietnam. In fact, for this whole 300,000-man communist army, in terms of supplies needed from outside the South, they needed only 34 tons a day to keep them going. Now, 34 tons may sound like a lot, but that is an incredibly meager amount that you could put inside of 7 2.5-ton trucks. And I don't care how much bombing of North Vietnam you do, you can't stop 7 truckloads of supplies from getting down south on a daily basis. It's simply impossible to do that. But in terms of the way the war was being waged, it was so infrequently conducted that no amount of bombing would have made a significant difference on the Southern war effort or the war effort in the South during the period 65 to 68. Well, in direct contrast to that is the war effort in 1972, where now the Viet Cong have been eliminated as a viable fighting force by coming out during the Tet Offensive. The war is waged in 1972 almost exclusively by the North Vietnamese Army, backed by large amounts of tanks and heavy artillery. They have vast logistical requirements, and thus they have targets, or air power has targets such as roads, bridges, communication lines, trains, fuel depots that are essential for that army to operate in 1972. That simply was not the case during the time period of 65 to 68 before the Tet Offensive. So what you have are very much two different wars, and the application of air power that was successful in one would not, in my opinion, have been successful in the other.
Well, Professor Klodfelter, thanks for visiting with us.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
I've been talking with Mark Klodfelter, the author of The Limits of Air Power, The American Bombing of North Vietnam.